Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hey, am I at day camp? 720 WGN, John Landecker at 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Yeah, mosquitoes. And therefore, we open the microphones and telephones to broadcast Rebecca Fife, Director of Research at Landmark Pest Management. Good evening, Rebecca. Thank you for taking time to join us this evening.
It's always a pleasure, John.
Yes, it is. I always enjoy having you on. And there's always a good reason. And this is a really good reason. You want to start out with mosquitoes? Because I ran into a couple of them today already.
Yes, I'd love to.
Okay, go on.
So I bet there are a lot of people being bitten by mosquitoes right now because it's, you know, a picnic holiday and it's dusk. And mosquitoes are most active at dusk and dawn and then throughout the night. So I bet there's a lot of people slapping their ankles right now. And I hope they put on repellent to avoid not just the unpleasant itch and the unsightly red bumps, but also mosquito-borne diseases.
Right. Is there any particular spray that is more effective than others for the prevention of mosquito bites?
Yeah, absolutely. Spray that contains DEET is the most effective. Those of us who have a sensitivity to DEET can wear spray that contains Picardin. That's the one that I like to wear. And while we have not that much control over mosquito populations and parks that we might go to or the forest preserve, we do have control over mosquito populations to a large degree in our own neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage everyone to do a really thorough inspection of their property to see if anything is holding water. So any kind of beach pails or toys, even if the beach pails are overturned, though there's a lip on them that can still hold water, the catch trays under plants, bird feeders, and in my case, my dog has a kiddie pool that he likes to splash in, and I make sure to dump that pool, dump those bird feeders, overturn those toys at least every 5 to 8 days, because it only takes 10 to 14 days for mosquitoes to emerge as adults from the water. So it's really important that we stay ahead of that reproductive cycle and don't let them emerge.
Yeah, I've heard about that before. Standing water, stagnant water, don't let it sit there because that's the breeding ground. And obviously you got to keep the doors shut and have the right type of screening, I would imagine.
Yes, absolutely. It's important to have tight-fitting window screens. And sometimes there are things that are in people's yards that they kind of can't take care of because they don't have the physical ability or the bandwidth. So sometimes you have to volunteer to go be a good neighbor and take care of something for someone so that you're not dealing with their mosquitoes. We had an example of that a few years ago. We had a senior who couldn't clean the gutters on their own garage, and we were just being devoured by mosquitoes because they were breeding in the water contained in the leaf-filled gutters. And we finally, a few neighbors pulled together, and we chipped in and had a gutter cleaning service come and clean those gutters.
That's a good thing to know. People helping people. Overgrown yard and shrubbery. That's something I have not connected with mosquitoes before.
Yeah, because mosquitoes are most active at dusk throughout the night and dawn. Then when the sun comes up, they don't want to dry out in the sunlight and the lack of humidity. So they go and shelter by clinging to the underside of leaves where it stays shady and moist. So the more leaves that you have, the more foliage that you have around your foundation and in your yard, the more habitat there is for mosquitoes to go and cling to the underside of those leaves. So trimming things back that you don't need, if there's a weedy or overgrown area, if you can get rid of that, it gives mosquitoes fewer places to hang out.
What about, you know, fogging? You know, do they still do that? Because I did that years ago. You'd light a match or a flame under this nozzle, and this fog, you'd spray it all over the backyard or wherever you wanted to go, and allegedly that would help take care of the mosquito and other pest problems, although I'm not quite sure how healthy it was. Is that something that still goes on?
It is, yes. So there are conventional mosquito treatments that use a pesticide that creates a fine mist, and you apply it, you know, to those leafy surfaces where the mosquitoes hang out. But what I really like is there is a version that's made of natural oils like garlic and citronella, and it works pretty well, too. So what we tell our clients at Landmark Pest Management is, let's start with the natural stuff, the non-toxic stuff, and if you don't get the satisfactory result that you're looking for, then we'll come and apply the conventional treatment for you at no charge. And would you believe that about 90% of homeowners are satisfied with the natural, non-toxic version so that we don't have to escalate to a conventional pesticide?
That's great news. We're talking to Rebecca Fife, Director of Research at Landmark Pest Management. Mosquitoes, we got some foxes and raccoons on the way. The phone number and the text number are the same, 312-981-7200, and I believe we have a question from the text line. Is that correct, Brandon?
Yeah, we do. This one's for, obviously, Rebecca. It says, do tiki torches work for mosquitoes?
You know, I don't know who that is, but she's on that person's on exactly the same wavelength, my mind.
Yeah, I had a similar question. Yeah, me too, because I saw some nice things from my balcony. I was like, will this work on mosquitoes?
Yeah, how about those tiki torches?
They sell some mosquito-specific tiki torches that have a strong lemony fragrance or eucalyptus fragrance, and it disguises our scent. So what the mosquitoes are attracted to is the carbon dioxide that we exhale in our body heat. And when those natural oils that are in the tiki torches are burning, it makes it harder for the mosquitoes to find us, and then they don't really want to be in the area. So they help a little bit, but only in a very small area.
What is it about the mosquito, maybe you've addressed this already, that, like, they hang out during the day, and then just as it begins to, the sun goes down and things get a little cooler, maybe not even cooler, maybe the humidity's high, all of a sudden it's their time to party. What is that? I mean, do they just stay out of the sun, stay out of the heat? Is that what they're after? Or is there more to
it? They do, yeah. No, they like to stay out of the heat because they don't want to dry out. And those female mosquitoes, which are the only ones that bite, the males don't bite you.
Really?
They're under a lot of pressure to have a blood meal because they can't lay their eggs and rear young if they don't get a blood meal. So it's very necessary for them. And they get it when it's dim or dark outside.
Yeah. I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. Rebecca Fife, Director of Research at Landmark Pest Management, 312-981-7200. We'll do more when we come back right here on 720 WGN. We've moved on, I believe, from mosquitoes. We've moved on as far as advice. We're just beginning to move in with them as the summer months are before us. But I read today that there are foxes living in Millennium Park, which surprised me, and apparently aren't causing any harm. Is that right?
John, I'm so excited that there are foxes living in the park. It's wonderful for the city. They can be our unofficial mascots. They're really cool. They're not dangerous to humans. They're not going to bother anyone's pets. They're shy. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful. They teach people to care about nature. And if we're lucky, they do like to return to the same den sites the next year. So with about a 4 to 5 year lifespan, we should see these foxes in the park again next year if we're lucky.
How is it that, you know, a wild animal, the fox, finds a place to reside in a major metropolitan city? It doesn't seem to, I mean, obviously they do, but what is it about that works for them?
Well, I've talked to some of the gardeners in the Lurie Garden, which is absolutely beautiful, and they've said that the most difficult thing that they contend with is rabbits eating their plants, and they lose a lot of value because those expensive plants get destroyed by rabbits. Right. So these foxes are probably such a blessing in that garden to help do some natural rabbit control. I've watched foxes eat voles. They're really great. If I had a golf course or a big lawn, I would be so happy to see a fox maintaining my lawn for me and controlling voles. So I think it's just wonderful. So they thrive in our cities when their food is available in our cities. And it's probably safer for them in the city than it is, you know, on some very rural property where yeah. someone is trying to do, you know, raising chickens or something where the right. foxes would be, their predation would be unwelcome and might, you know, get them in trouble or get them shot. They're pretty safe in the city. And they also might like to be in a more populated area like Millennium Park, because mm-hmm. in the wilder areas in the city, like along train tracks and areas where people don't go, that's more coyote habitat. And coyotes are a pretty significant danger to foxes. So the fox probably has a really nice place that's away from coyotes with plenty of voles and rabbits to eat in Millennium Park. It's pretty prime real estate for foxes.
You're just telling me that the foxes eat rabbits?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I heard that correct, that I wasn't, you know, just had visions of little bunnies being shredded.
Oh. Well, think of them eating rats, if that works better
yeah,
for you.
That works
they
way
do
better.
Eat rats too.
Yeah, so they're very useful in that sense. Helping
they're
the,
very useful, yeah. and they avoid people. The way to be safe around foxes mm-hmm. is to keep wildlife wild. Don't feed them. Don't habituate them to right. approach people right. or getting meals from people. If they're wild and they're shy enough to stay away from people, which they are naturally, unless you change their behavior by feeding them, then there should not be any human-wildlife conflict between people and foxes.
As I was reading the article today about the foxes Millennium Park, I did not realize that, and I'm sure you can clear this up for me, define a fox kit. K-I-T.
A fox. Well, when a mommy fox and a daddy fox love each other very much, John.
Yes.
They make fox kits. And
they make
after
fox
that,
kits.
About... Yes, about 2 months later, the female gives birth to 4 of them on average, and she's a really good digger, so she can dig her own den site. But in this instance, she is utilizing the inset metal grate that houses a tree in the sidewalk. So she's found sort of a man-made den that meets her needs. And then the kits are born, and they venture out with mom, and she teaches them how to hunt and how to be foxes.
Fox kits, not fox kids, kits. Where does
yep.
that come from?
Kits.
I don't get it. I mean, I know mommy and daddy foxes get together and, you know, get it on, and here come the little babies and stuff like that. But maybe I'm just dense. What does the kit thing got to do with it? What's kit got to do with it, Tina Turner? I mean,
you know, every different animal's young has its own name. Like there's yeah. whale calves and
yes,
whale caps and
gaggle,
deer
Google,
fawns and
right.
Horse foals, right.
I never heard of a fox
yep.
kit.
Yeah, raccoons can be either kits or pups. You can use both of those terms for baby raccoons.
So the kit is specific to the young in this
yes.
case, indeed.
Yes, well, exactly.
Now, you've moved on to another topic that we should address, and that is the raccoons, who also populate this area. And they are not in the friendly, gee, we love you fox category, are they?
Well, again, I think the best motto is keep wildlife wild. There uh-huh. was recently a woman in Maine who found a raccoon outdoors and brought it to Petco to see if they would trim its nails for her. And they very smartly refused. But unfortunately, while she was waiting in line trying to arrange this, she let a lot of other shoppers hold it, kiss it. And it was a wild animal. So if it had rabies, those people would have all had to undergo rabies vaccines. And if the Department of Natural Resources, once they heard about that, couldn't obtain that raccoon to get it tested for rabies, all of those people would have had to undergo rabies vaccines. But luckily, they found the woman, they found the raccoon, they tested it for rabies, and it tested negative. Would you believe that I've gotten 2 phone calls this month from people who live right here in Chicagoland who've told me that they've picked up a sick or injured raccoon and brought it into their home, and they want to know what to do next?
Well, what should, what, do not, well, what's the answer to that? I mean, other than, do you, you know, let wildlife be wildlife. I mean, obviously, I think it's maybe on the part of some of us, human nature, to want to help a critter that's got something going on. And, you know, on the surface, raccoons to some look cuddly and cute, but there's a downside to that. What would you say? I mean, what do you tell these clients?
Well, it's important. Yeah, it's important to never touch a wild animal, whether it's sick, whether it's injured, incapacitated. So if you want to help it, you can call 311 in the city of Chicago and make a report to City of Chicago Animal Control. If you're in Cook County Animal Control would respond for a sick raccoon. And there are also private companies like Landmark Pest Management that would come out and help someone. But a homeowner should never touch a wild animal. And in these 2 instances, these calls that we received, one woman saw it laying on the ground in her apartment complex. She went outside with just a bath towel and picked it up using just a bath towel. It could have bitten her right through that. And she brought it into her home, and she just put it in an open-topped laundry basket and then texted some photos into us and said, here, I brought this raccoon into my living room, and it's in a laundry basket. What do I do now? She thought it just needed a warm-up and a good meal, and then she thought she could send it on her way, but it was in the advanced stages of a disease called distemper. And it was very near death, and we went and picked it up, and sadly it had to be euthanized, but she had an unvaccinated puppy in the house because her new puppy wasn't old enough to be vaccinated yet, and distemper is deadly to unvaccinated dogs, so we told her to rush that puppy to the vet right away. Because she potentially exposed her puppy to this really dangerous disease. Luckily, humans can't get distemper, but it's very dangerous to domestic dogs, especially those that are unvaccinated. So she thought she was doing a good thing, and then she really put her pet at risk.
Rebecca Fife, thank you so much. Director of Research at Landmark Pest Management. How do people get a hold of you for your expertise?
You can reach us at 847-870-7175 or on the web at landmarkpest.com.
Thank you for being with us once again. Always informative.
Thanks, John.